The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.
Welcome back to the Business Bunker Show here on Channel Radio in association with Biz Radio. You're listening to me, Paul Andrews, and the stonkingly gorgeous Jewel Sirkin, who's gone missing. But never mind, she'll be back shortly. Now listen, last week I was invited along to the Women in Business Big Show that took place at Longfield in northwest Kent there. It's an annual event. It's been going quite a few years. It gets bigger and better every year. It was a fantastic event. I went along and I met loads of people that were speaking at the event, that were exhibiting there and that were visiting. And I took the opportunity to do some interviews, some Vox Pop and some longer interviews with some of the people there. So let's have a listen to all the people that came to that show. This is Paul Andrews reporting for the Business Bunker Show. I'm at the Women in Business Big Show 2022 at Longfield, and I'm going to be interviewing people today that are exhibiting and visiting the show. And my first guest is Keith Grimley from Gravesham Borough Council. Keith, good morning.
Good morning, Paul.
How are you?
Very well, yeah. Pleased to be here.
Cool. So tell us a little bit about your role at Gravesham Council.
So my role is economic development. Put simply, we're here to support local businesses, incoming businesses, to provide support and assistance to grow, really, a supportive community.
Right, absolutely. And I know, because I've known you a long time in your various roles, and it's something you've done around Kent in terms of supporting the small business community. And the small business community, sometimes, and national politicians, I think, don't really give it the focus that it deserves. But I know that you guys in Gravesham and other places are really keen on small businesses.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, very much the lifeblood of the small business community. You know, we run networking events which are really well attended. There's a strong community there, and you know, whether it's a new startup or a business that's looking to grow, we're there to support, and we know how important it is.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Now, you, as you say, you run a lot of events and you provide a lot of support and help for small businesses. If I'm a small business in the Gravesham area, or I'm thinking of starting my own business, is there a resource that you have that I can go to as a start point?
Yeah, I'd say follow our Twitter account, Gravesham for Business, which is Gravesham for Biz, and sign up to our business. Our Gravesham Business Network, which you can find easily enough on Google. And once you're in that loop, you know, there's all sorts of support that's available. We kind of click together the national support and the regional support and try and make it relevant for local businesses. And I think crucially, we're on the end of the phone as well. So, you know, Keith Grimley, Gravesham Borough Council, you know, give us a call and we can help.
You've got humans. They've got humans. Yeah, I like anyone that has humans. We were just before we started this interview, I was having a little rant about how so often these days there's not a human at the end of a phone, or if there is, it's just a computer saying no job. So that's really useful to know that you can ring the council and get help and advice and point it in the right direction.
Exactly, that's what we're all about. I mean, a lot of council services are around compliance and guidance and licensing, but economic development is a friendly face, really. So, you know, if you're not sure how we can help, or you've got a project you're trying to get off the ground, or you've just got a query, give us a call. We're really, really keen to speak to people, and it's not often we can't help in some way, whether it's financial support or whether it's just pointing people in the right direction. So, you know, it's a great community. There's loads of upside in Gravesend and Gravesham. We're close to London. We're seeing loads of new people coming into the area, you know, we're bucking a lot of the trends.
Fantastic. Keith, that's brilliant. It's really good to see you. Enjoy the rest of your day, and thank you for talking to the Business Bunker Show.
Thank you, Paul. Cheers.
Here at the Women in Business Show, we were opened this morning by Deborah Turner from the Federation of Small Business, and I have Deborah with me now. Good morning, Deborah. How are you?
I'm really well, thank you. I'm so pleased to be here today.
Fantastic. You did the opening ceremony, as I said, and gave a talk, which was lovely. Just remind us, because you've had a lot of roles with the FSB over the years, and I know that you're heavily committed to it and you do lots of interesting stuff. So what's your role at the moment with FSB?
Yeah, so currently my role is I'm the National Champion Policy for Women in Enterprise. So it's very much focused around supporting women in business, whether they want to start a business, whether they want to grow their business, whether they want to take over the world with their business.
Absolutely. And it is a statistic here in Kent that a lot of startup businesses, I think the last time I looked, it's something like 42% or something of new startups are started by female entrepreneurs.
Yep, that's absolutely. Certainly in the last 3 years, through the pandemic, we've had more women starting businesses. Mm. What we want to do is support those businesses so that they stay in business. Yeah. One of the things that the FSB are lobbying on at the moment, and I spoke about that in the opening ceremony, was trying to change the maternity allowance. So currently, if you're PAYE, you get statutory maternity allowance. You do not get an equivalent if you're self-employed as a woman in business. Mm. So that's one of the things that the FSB are lobbying for, and that's part of my role as the FSB National Champion for Women in Enterprise.
That's fantastic. And of course, the FSB are a great lobbying organisation supporting your 200 odd thousand members in the small business community. And there's 5.9 million small businesses in the UK, lifeblood of the economy. And I'm not entirely convinced that our politicians ever realised that, but we'll leave that for another day. So, Deborah, the FSB have one of the headline sponsors for this show. It's fairly obvious what I'm going to ask you, and it's fairly obvious what your question, what your response is going to be. But what inspired the FSB to support a show like this?
Yeah, so we are passionate about supporting small business in every respect. And particularly, we know that if more women started a business, we could add $250 billion to the economy. FSB have done some great research around supporting business, supporting women in business. And we know that one of the barriers to women not starting a business is not seeing enough role models and not having enough business support. What this show, the Big Women in Business show, gives is the opportunity to see other women running a business. It gives them the support. It's signposting. It's a brilliant event that Shana's put together, and we want to continue our support. We've supported it every year, and we will continue to do that because of what it provides for small businesses.
That's fantastic, and it's absolutely brilliant. And an organisation like the FSB supporting scientists gives it a lot of credibility, because the FSB is a campaigning organisation that supports everybody in that community. Deborah, it's lovely to see you as always. Thank you so much for spending a few minutes talking to the Bunker Show.
Thank you very much, and goodbye to everybody.
I've just found Sam Presnell, who's the coordinator for the Kent and Medway Careers Hub, amongst other things. Sam, lovely to see you.
Hi, Paul. Lovely to see you too. How are you?
I'm really well. I haven't seen you for a while, and it's been a kind of weird couple of years, really, hasn't it?
Really bizarre couple of years. Really, really bizarre couple of years. And as we're learning through education, which is obviously the industry that I'm in, and supporting young people with careers, that's really had a dramatic impact on them the last couple of years. But they're coming through it now. Businesses are supporting us, which is absolutely fantastic. And that's what it's all about. It's actually bringing businesses and education together to build those future workforces for our young people. So that's what we're working on.
That's fantastic. And it is imperative. I was speaking to somebody else earlier, how imperative it is we encourage young people into the world of work, because we're really, really struggling to get people into jobs.
We really are, Paul. You're absolutely right. And with the opportunities across Kent and Medway at the moment, particularly with the Lower Thames Crossing, the Ebbsfleet development, Garden City development going on, everything going on across WHO, there's so much going on across Kent and Medway. It really is about bringing those businesses in to talk to the young people about the opportunities, to break some of the stereotypes that are around there as well about career pathways for boys and girls, and you know, to really open up those avenues for them. And that's what we're here to do, to get businesses into schools to talk to them about the opportunities that are out there for them, particularly local.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And I think it's imperative from both sides of the equation that business people spend more time talking to schools and colleges and students about what they want. You know, you get a lot of business people that moan, oh, you know, the youth of today don't do this, don't do that. But how do the youth today know what you want if you don't tell them?
Absolutely, you're 100% right there, and we talk about that all the time. We also talk about actually schools educating businesses on, you know, why it's important for us to have careers going through the curriculum, and actually that every subject has a careers link, and that we talk about careers in everyday lessons and how it can help our students think about the right pathway for them. And also when the younger students are, you know, coming into that secondary education, not quite sure what subjects do they need for sectors that they're interested in. Well, if we're talking about careers in our curriculum and educating our businesses as well, then, you know, we're aligning the right people for the right jobs, and that's what we want for everybody to be successful and have a pathway.
Yeah, and I'm totally on board with that, and I totally agree. It's one, you know, that I do quite a bit of stuff in schools as well, and you guys have supported me doing that too, through the education people. But one of the things that always
I dwell on is the career aspect of something. When you talk to young people about the world of work, not surprisingly, they tend to think of jobs. Yeah, a job doing X or a job doing Y. They don't think in terms of a journey. Yeah, and a career is a journey. You start at a point and then grow from that.
100%, absolutely. You're absolutely right. It's a roadway, and it takes many different twists and turns, and that's okay. And you know, also it's about changing the mindset of young people and employers that actually it's okay to have more than one journey on your pathway. You know, I certainly am not in the industry that I left school to be in, as many people aren't, and I think that's great, because again, it's about those transferable skills and being able to develop those and share them out. You know, get out there and experience the world and work with many different people. You know, great opportunity.
You're absolutely right. I mean, I added it up once. I've had 7 completely different careers. I've been around a few hundred years, obviously. But again, and I think especially for Generation Z and those coming after them, it's the pace of change has accelerated enormously. So I think they're going to have even more career changes due to the fact that, you know, jobs and careers will come and go. You know, things that existed last year will be superseded by some new technology and then change.
Absolutely. I mean, those students that will be joining Year 7 in September, you know, literally 2 weeks away now, they're going to be going into jobs that we don't even know exist yet, and that's the world we're preparing them for. And that's why it is so imperative that businesses and education really, really do come together, and from now, you know, really work closely for the future workforce of this country and the economy of this country. You know, it's so, so important. It really is.
Absolutely. We love what you're doing, Sam. You're doing a fantastic job, and it is incredibly important. And as a small business owner, I'm really appreciated of what you guys do, because you're creating our future as well, and our future talent and employees. So thank you for that. Pleasure to talk to you. Thank you for spending time on The Bunker.
Thank you very much for it, and as always, it's great to see you.
Go. Oh, look, it's Jenny Jones. Jenny, how are you? It's lovely to see you.
Oh, lovely to see you. I'm very well, thank you. Lovely to see you too.
Cool. So, Jenny, why don't you tell the listeners what it is you do?
I'm Jenny Jones. I'm a happiness coach and a well-being consultant. So what do I do? If you're having an event and you think, I need somebody for 30 minutes to energize you, to make people feel good, I'm that person. Or if you wake up in the morning and you feel really stressed, you want to be happy, I'm that person, because I can help you to wake up and say, wake up and feel happy, boom, boom, I feel like dancing around, boom, 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 boom.
That's fantastic. I tell you what, listeners, you can't see this because it's on the radio, but she has she has the most fantastic smile. She has a smile that would light up a grey day like it is out there at the moment. So, Jenny, what got you into being a happiness consultant?
I mean, for me, it started in 2003 when I became divorced. So for 5 years, it was like a shock. I felt depressed. I felt low. And I was suffering from anxiety as well. Because imagine, you know, you're a couple and now it's just you. Having to look after 2 children, it was really a very, very dark period.
Yeah.
But after that 5 years, when I regained my confidence by going to different organizations and seeking help, I thought to myself, I've come through this for a reason. So there's a purpose in my pain. And I thought, wouldn't it be nice to help other people? So I then trained as a life coach with the aim of helping people to just find that happiness. So no matter what's going on, no matter how life is so bad, finding that joy every day to wake up and just feel good.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're right. I mean, a lot of what affects us on a day-to-day basis is driven by our own attitude to it.
Mm. Yes, a lot of what you say is quite true. It's our attitude. So now I try to look at the positive in everything. Mm. And one other thing I do before I go to bed each night, I just take time to be grateful for life and just think about happy thoughts before I go to sleep. So no matter what's going through, I say, give yourself permission to smile.
That's fantastic, and what a lovely philosophy. Listen, Jenny, if people want to find out more about your business, what's the best way to do that? Have you got a website?
Yes, I've got a website, www.confidentqueenjennywithag.com.
Confident Queen Jenny with a G. That's fantastic. Thank you so much for spending time talking to us on the Bunker Show. Enjoy the rest of your day here at the Women in Business Big Show, and we'll speak to you again soon.
Okay, thank you. Take care now.
I've just bumped into Julie Hawkins of the Single Mums Business Network. Julie, good afternoon. Now, we're at the Women in Business Big Show 2022 here at Longfield. Why don't you tell us a little bit about Julie to start with, and then about the network?
Oh, hello. Good afternoon, and thank you for having me. So we are about Julie. So I'm a 40-something-year-old woman. I became a single mum in my mid-30s, and which meant that I had a good 20-year experience of professional employment. And when I became a single mum in my 30s, I realised I suddenly faced barriers to employment. So I embarked on an entrepreneurial journey to try and still maintain that work ethic and whilst managing to be there for my daughter at the same time. And to cut a very long story short, I designed a product, I did a law degree, all of these things gave me new barriers, and I still find it extremely difficult to be financially independent. I did it in the end. I managed to break free from needing any support, and I managed to find flexible work, and I managed to grow my business to a level that sort of helped me. So now that's why I set up the Single Mums Business Network, to try and sort of tackle all of these issues and help other women at the same time.
I have great empathy with what you're saying, and we live in kind of weird times. I read a couple of days ago some analysis that said something like 46% of people in their 40s and above live on their own, which is a massive change, societal change. Family breakup, and all kind of, all, hundreds of different reasons. But it is a very big change in society, where there are lots of single parent families. It tends to be women more than men, because they tend to end up with the childcare duties. But even careers in families are not easy for people with children, because you have to look after kids. So you know, based on your experiences, you started the Single Mums Business Network. Tell me a bit about the network.
Yeah, so exactly. So I do signpost to the men, because like you said, 10% of single parents are dads. So I do adequate signposting for them. But there's a very different public psychology around a single mum and a single dad in terms of whether you're met with sympathy or stigma. So obviously my network is specifically for the female entity of that. And yeah, it really is about... We have a very, very negative perception of us publicly, that we're work shy, or, you know, living off a state and all of those kinds of things. Or whenever we're seen on the media, we are represented as single mums as particularly overweight or covered in tattoos and saying we can't afford to eat and all of those things. That's all you ever see on the media when you see coverage of a single mum. So I really promote, you know, we're just the same as every other woman. It's just some members are widows, some members have left domestic abuse situations, some members have been cheated on, some members have just chose to walk away, because actually I think now in the 21st century we accept a partnership as love and not necessarily as a team, you know, a team commitment that you make in your 20s and keep to your 90s. We're in love, we stay in that relationship when we're happy, when both partners are happy, and now it's more acceptable to leave if one of you is not happy. So all we need to do then is make sure that actually you can survive with one income per household, and you can look after your own home, and you can look after your own family. So that's the only problem that we're still tackling, is that I should still be able to work full time, bring in a full time salary, and afford to pay my own mortgage or rent and my own bills.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, and based on some of the things you were saying there, these days it's not even easy for a two income family to pay for everything, you know, especially with the cost of energy and everything else going through the roof. So a single income family is even harder, and I get that. I'm guessing that an awful lot of people in that situation will do what you've done, even if they had a career before they became single. One of the only ways that you can manage anything at all is to start your own business.
Yeah, absolutely. I was completely pushed out of 9 to 5, and I really didn't understand before I became a mum let alone a single mum, I really didn't understand there would be a childcare barrier. I thought I would finish maternity leave, put my daughter in childcare and crack on with full-time working. I just didn't see it coming. So then all of a sudden, after 20 years and being a homeowner, I was an estate agent and my employer said, no, you can't leave at 4:30 to go and get your child before they close. And the childcare said, no, we're not going to stay open late for you. And so I was like, okay, right, wow. So all of a sudden, you're in a situation where I needed benefits for the first time in 20 years. I was like, no, I shouldn't be here. I've got an able mind. I've got an able body. You know, I'm skilled. I'm intelligent. I'm hardworking. Why am I sat in this office asking for help? And it was a real fight. I had to, you know, I'm writing a book about it at the moment, actually, breaking out of benefits jail. And it was such a difficult situation to get out of. And it shouldn't have been hard at all. Yeah. Just should not have been hard.
It's staggering in this day and age as well, isn't it? Where we have so many tools, the technology tools, that don't need you to be anywhere in particular in order to do something. That there's still far too many organisations that go, no, it's 9 to 5. And I have to say, in one of my businesses, many, many years, I've been in business myself 30 years, and many, many years ago when I started hiring my first people, they said, well, what are the hours? Oh, I don't care. Come in when you want, do the work, go home when you've finished. Well, you know, I'm not paying you as a time clock, I'm paying you for your talent. And the funny thing was, everybody went, yeah. And then I get to the office at 9 o'clock and everyone was already in. And I go, 3 o'clock, I go, I'm going home. And I go, oh, okay. And ring the office, they're still there at 5. And you go, why are you still here? Well, we don't trust you. Yeah. But since lockdown and things like that, we have kind of experienced working from home. I think that's going to change again, because people are going to go, hold on a minute, my electricity bill is going to go through the roof. I need to be back in someone else's office paying for it. But on the whole, you're right. And it is right, not just with single parents, but even, you know, with whole families are still struggling, and childcare is still an issue.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, even you've got two parent families who need their income topped up by benefits because one of them can't work enough, you know, and that is a real issue. When you don't want, you're proud, you've got a strong work ethic, you don't want that. I spoke to Rishi Sunak last week and I said to him in the hustings in the audience, I said, look, you're telling people they need upskilling. They don't need upskilling. What they need is these barriers to work removed. Yeah. You know, you've got industries crying out, you've got hospitality, care, all of these industries saying, we can't get the workers. Why have we got a benefits culture when we can't get the workers? And you've got me saying, you're telling people they need to be available to work evenings and weekends. You're telling people only to apply if they can work one weekend out of every three. You don't understand how many people you're actually isolating from your workplace. One of my local landladies was brilliant. She took it on and she said, right, she advertised one job and she said, okay, I will split this job between two people. One of you can do it during school hours and one of you can do it in the evenings and at weekends when you've either got a partner at home or somebody who's retired. Or when I was in my 20s with my husband, I would have happily taken on a second job at the weekends. And this is how we get over this problem, is splitting these jobs between people who are free at weekends and people who are only free during school hours. But we're still stuck in this like 1900s mindset where we're like, oh no, you know. And it's a simple solution to a very, very, very expensive problem.
Yeah. You're absolutely right. It's just managing flexibility, isn't it? And I don't understand why so many organisations still can't recognise that and try to cope with it. But I think it's like a lot of things these days as well, because I'm getting incredibly old. I'm getting very curmudgeonly about technology these days, and we use technology to do a lot of things, but there's no humanness about it. Yeah, and therefore people go, oh no, well, computers say you can't do that. Yeah, well, it only takes a little bit of thought. But I think, and I'll be interested in your thoughts on this, I think there's a much more needed from government in terms of childcare and the provisions for childcare. And I'm not one for asking the government to spend taxpayers' money doing something. What I think they should do is give you tax incentives. Yeah. So if you're working, you get a tax rebate for childcare and things like that. I don't know if you have any thoughts on that.
I've got a lot of thoughts on that. have a lot of thoughts, and I shared these thoughts really strongly, like you said, with the sort of incoming Prime Minister. I spoke to both of them, and yes, no, you know, there's lots, again, we get all this very, very negative, very, very, very hurtful comments on social media. Why should we pay for your kids? You know, if you can't afford to have children, don't have them. We're not paying for your childcare. At the end of the day, the government are either going to need to pay somebody benefits for 52 weeks per year, or they can help with childcare for 13 weeks per year when the schools are closed.
Yeah.
Because nobody with 4 weeks annual leave on work can cover 13 weeks childcare. It's that simple. And it's fine, you know, but it's going to, the cost to the economy, I mean, you're saving 39 weeks per person in benefits if you can just fill that gap, because there's so many, I think literally millions actually, I think it's £2.97 billion was spent on that, and there's no need for it. So yes, again, but it's affordability up front, childcare needs paying for, but again, we've got, there's so many resources to tap into there. You've got second and third year university students who maybe want to go into the world of childcare or education, and perhaps they could do work experience over the summer for doing holiday clubs. There's so many things. Yes, we need to pay for it. I'm all for paying for it. But again, it just needs to be manageable. But of course, we've got the combined cost of living and the combined salaries and the combined... There's so many things to consider, isn't there? And you need to...
Do you know, in all kinds of areas of life as well, but again, you know, I detest politicians with vengeance, I'm afraid, right across the board. I don't like any of them because they don't deal with reality and they don't deal with everybody's day-to-day issues and problems. They put in place systems that benefit big corporations and that's about it, or big government organisations. Just as for instance, my old mum, bless her, is 93. She lives on her own. She needed care. But now, the care agencies will charge a fortune. She could find people that are qualified carers that would work for half the price and earn more money doing it. Yeah. And the government's response to that is, okay, Mrs. Andrews, 93, you've got to start a payroll and you've got to deduct workplace pensions. And you go, how's that going to happen? Yeah. Can't this person just work self-employed? Nope. You're not allowed to work self-employed for the same person. And you think, that's just bonkers.
Yeah.
It's just absolutely bonkers. Yeah. There are too many rules and regulations, and we understand why they do it, you know, to minimise avoidance of things, but it also stops people doing basically straightforward things.
Yeah, and you know, it's so true. There's so much bureaucratic red tape that doesn't need to be there, that causes so many people so many problems. And let's talk about avoidance for a minute. Like I said, I had 20 years as a normal employee pre this whole thing. Avoidance, you know, I had every employer I worked for employed his wife on £30,000 when I was on £12,000, and she never set foot anywhere near the place. You know, tax avoidance is in its abundance everywhere. You know, but they concentrate on the little people who are just trying to make a living, yeah, than the big people who are absolutely screwing the country by millions. Yeah. Sorry, it's a bit naughty to say that, but I'm sure you can cut it out. But it just drives me mad.
It's true, and that's how the system gets manipulated, because you know they make these rules for the big guys because the big guys can get around them.
Yeah.
And small businesses, self-employed, sole traders, individuals suffer the consequences of that. But let's try and end the interview on a bit of a positive note. You have this network. Tell me a little bit about the network itself. How many people you get involved? What's happening?
So I've got it is a private members club. So the nationally throughout the UK, we have around 50 members throughout the UK. But I've got a much wider network that aren't members. But yes, it's very positive. You know, they join because we've all walked the same walk, we understand it, and we all kind of help each other to remove the stigma, to shine a positive light on it, to smash these barriers. And at the end of the day, I do it to help them promote their businesses through otherwise normally too expensive channels.
Fantastic. So if people want to find out more about your network, what's the best way to do that? Have you got a website?
I've got a website, Single Mums Business Network. There's signposting for dads on there as well, like I mentioned earlier, so don't be afraid to go there if you're a single dad. SMBN for Single Mums Business Network. If you Google SMBN, like, we dominate the first few pages, we've got really good coverage, so you can't miss us. If you just remember SMBN, you can't miss us.
Fantastic. Julie, it's been a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you for spending the time talking to us, and we wish you continued success with the Single Mums Business Network.
Thank you. Lovely to be here. Thanks, Paul.
Hey, listen, I've just met Emily Pollington here at the Women in Business Big Show. It's been a fantastic day so far, and it's lovely to meet Emily. Pleasure to meet you, Emily.
Hello.
Right, so tell us a little bit about you. Now, I understand that one of your things is Pilates.
That's correct. I am a Pilates instructor, and I run a Pilates business.
I tried Pilates once a couple of years ago. I did enjoy it, but I just thought it was a bit odd. It was me and like 10 women.
Well, I do have quite a lot of guys coming to my classes, and everybody is welcome at any level. And it's a lot of fun. I think that some people still don't quite understand what Pilates is about, but if you just give it a go, so many people enjoy it. It's low impact. We use small equipment to help you understand where you should be feeling the muscles working and where the muscles should be feeling like they're switched off. Activating your core, which is going to give you a lot of better posture, and at the end of the class everybody's smiling, they all enjoy it, and I just cannot go on about the most amazing power of Pilates. It's so good for you.
That's fantastic. You're passionate about it, and that's quite right too. So tell me what inspired you to start your business, and when did you do it?
Okay, so I would start off as a fitness instructor, and then I went and did a holistic therapy course when I was a single mum, and absolutely loved that. Massage was my passion, and I'm very well qualified in lots of different ways of massage, and I specialise in hot stones, and I worked out of osteopaths for many years. I also am a mother of four, and when you're massaging people all day long, you get very, very tired. So I did Pilates so that I could manage myself throughout my daily work, and then I thought, hang on a minute, I've got all the anatomy and physiology I'd need to be a Pilates instructor. So I retrained, and I got very good training through Pilates Solutions in Surrey, and I now teach people through Zoom, face-to-face, private, on mobile, Pilates, and I can just see the mental and physical benefits. I also teach children. I've gone into preschools, and I just want to tell everyone how fantastic Pilates is. So even if it's not with me, if you find a local Pilates teacher, go down, have a session, and you will enjoy it, I'm sure.
Okay, that's fantastic, and you're very passionate about what you do, and that's lovely to see. Just for those that don't know, just give us a very quick overview of the essence of Pilates. A lot of people have heard of it, but they're not entirely sure what it is. They think it's some form of yoga or whatever. But just give us an overview essence of what Pilates is, or the philosophy behind it. Yeah.
A is for alignment. B is for breathing, and C is for centering. So you basically teach people those three watch points in different positions. So you can be standing, you could be lying down on a mat, which is quite a lot of the work is from lying on the floor, which is quite popular. And then sidelining, prone is when you're lying on your tummy. And basically, Pilates is really different from yoga, because it's all about strengthening the joints so that you can stand better and be stronger in your own body. Basically, it makes you stronger from within.
Right.
And it is about flexibility, which yoga is heavily on the flexibility side. So Pilates is about being flexible, but there are other key issues, and it's really good for helping you any panic attacks you might be getting. It helps you with your breathing. It helps with balance. And as we know, as we're all getting older, you know, when you fall, that's sometimes the beginning of, you know, the final bit. So
yeah, yeah,
it's really important. It's very good for strengthening and toning, flexibility. I think there's 8 principles, and I think I've gone through all of them now. But think about the thing I like about Pilates over yoga is it's very structured and repetitive.
Right.
And although it seems like a lot of things you've got to think about the first class you go to, you will remember things each week you've learnt, and you do start to get it. And when you start to get it, you start noticing other people's postures, you know, when they come in with rounded shoulders, you know, like the teenage look, moping around. You know, when you've done Pilates for a little while, you start to stand better. People start noticing, and they go, oh, have you lost weight? And it's like, oh no, it's just I'm holding myself better. And
sucking it in. That's my trick.
Yes, well, you mustn't stop breathing when you're doing Pilates. But it's just such an enjoyable activity to do. And in my classes, which run for an hour at a time, your whole body gets a workout. And everyone's smiling at the end of it, as I mentioned. And it's much more about maintenance rather than fixing after you've got an issue. So I really do believe that Pilates is one of the best things you could do for yourself.
And my experience of it, as I said, I did a few Pilates classes a few years ago. For someone like me that was unfit, still is unfit, but I was unfit at the time. It's actually quite a gentle form of exercise as well. It's not severe.
Yes, it's low impact. So it's like the opposite end to jumping up and down and whatever. And so it's much more, it's much easier for people to get. And that's where it can make you feel really like relaxed and rejuvenated after a class. Although you are working quite hard. When someone's done a class of Pilates and they go, oh, I didn't feel anything, they've done it wrong. And one of the things that I specialise in is explaining very, very clearly where you should be feeling it, what muscles are switched off, which ones are switched on, you know. And just come to one of my classes. You can get them face to face or via Zoom. Right. And it's all about community and helping each other, and that's why I'm up for this award.
Right, so you're up for an award on BBC Radio Kent. Is it the Together Award?
Yes. Yeah. So there are a number of different awards, and my category is the Together category.
Right.
And apparently I did actually get the most votes out of any of the other nominees. So I'm very proud about that. And I love all of my my members of my community, which I have been growing for over 8 years now. And they all agree with me that if you can just commit to doing a weekly Pilates class, which shouldn't be too much money, most people should be able to afford, that is the best thing you can do. And when you do your dog walking or when you go to Keep Fit or the gym, everything will work better through the Pilates.
Right.
And that's why lots of sports personalities and sports people, professional people, do use Pilates as part of their training regime. And it's just so popular. So don't be scared of it.
Do it. That's it.
Feel the power of Pilates.
Absolutely. Emily, it's been a pleasure to talk to you. So if people want to find out more, they need to Google...
The Pilates Element.
Yeah.
And my name's Emily Pollington. And there is a website, and you can join through Zoom classes or face-to-face. And I would always be happy to help with any inquiries.
Fantastic. We're going to put a link. The reason we haven't read out the website is because it's quite a long link. So we're going to put the link on the radio website so you can find it there. So check on the radio website on Kent Business Radio and you'll see Emily's link there. Emily, it's been a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much. Enjoy the rest of your afternoon.
Thank you so much. It's been great talking to you. Thank you.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.
Well, that was six really interesting people that I managed to speak to last week at the Women in Business Big Show. A complete diverse range of people, as you heard, from Gravesham Borough Council through Deborah Turner, through Sam Presnell from the Education People, the lovely Jenny Jones, Julie Hawkins with the Single Mums Business Network, and then filling up with Emily Pollington. Fantastic range of different interviews, different things, different businesses that we talked to. Really good stuff.
We've had a few tweets things, but I'm just going to read a little email because we haven't had time. Are you going to join me? This is from the lovely Zoe Cairns. On how to get more clients. It's a free social media challenge. It's all online and it's happening on the 12th to the 16th of September. I will walk you through the step-by-step strategies I use to get started without knowing anything about social media, and you'll learn how I've gone on to become one of the most successful social media mentors. You'll also hear about our social media success formula that you can start implementing in your business to start generating leads and increased profits in the 2020 to 2023 year. So grab your free place now on the Social Media Success Challenge, how to get more clients. And what they're going to be teaching you, I hear you ask, they're going to ask teach you how to become a good social media, have a good strategy, how to attract your ideal customer, how to build your email list and online community, how to increase your social media engagement, and how to get more inquiries and clients. You can go to zcsocialmedia.com, put a little / social media success challenge, and find out all about it there. And it's a free online challenge.
It's fantastic. Zoe's brilliant. She's absolutely brilliant. I highly recommend her. She's just wonderful. She's really knowledgeable on all things social media from a marketing point of view and from an engagement point of view. And she does all these things for nothing, and it's just brilliant. Get on it.
And the Tenterden Chamber have said, hi, Vanilla Webb and Jules Serkin. Please, can you give a shout out to a busy Chamber of Commerce team? Yes, we will.
We will. Shout it out. The Chamber of Commerce, Tenterden.
And then a little moan here from DG East.
Oh, Terry's been on, has he?
DG's one was our sponsor, isn't it, this month?
He is indeed. Yeah.
He goes, hi, Jules, and your little helper, Paul.
Uh-huh.
How about a shout out for a busy show sponsor still being robbed by the FCA?
Yep.
Remind me what the FCA stands for.
It's the Financial Conduct Authority. Terry runs a vehicle leasing and vehicle supply company.
I've got to send you the photo, haven't I?
And of course, a lot of vehicle supply is about raising finance to pay for a vehicle. As a motor dealer, you have to be registered. You have to be licensed by the Financial Conduct Authority, even if you're not providing the finance. So he's not the finance company. He's just signing the paperwork from a finance company. But you have to have a license from the FCA to do that. They provide nothing for you. You just have to have a license to sign the paperwork from a finance company who is also licensed by the FCA. Well, for some reason, the FCA, that license cost a couple hundred pound a year, and all of a sudden they put the price of the license up by 300% this year.
Crazy.
And nobody knows why or what you get for it. It's outrageous. It's just outrageous. I don't want to get too political here, but I saw a tweet earlier from someone who said, surely this is now looking deliberate. Yeah, the amount of destruction to small businesses is unbelievable.
Yeah.
And when you look at almost everything, it's like energy bills. You know, I've got four premises. I've got four offices. My energy bills are going through the roof.
Yeah.
I get a bill for 30,000 quid for electricity. And you go, what?
Yeah.
What?
I know. Well, I was listening.
I've got a hamster in a wheel that generates my electricity.
Yeah. I was listening to a butcher who's, you know, having to fold in the high street because his bills have gone up.
Mm.
And you think of the hospitality industry. They're cooking.
It's
they're providing
decimated
warmth this winter. You know, a place where people go to get warm and snug and cozy in a pub.
I was.
They can't cope.
Yeah, I was chatting to our friend the other day from the Institute of Hospitality. Mr.
Robert Richardson.
Yeah, Robert, yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, the hospitality industry was absolutely mangled by COVID and the lockdowns. And all of those restrictions. It absolutely devastated the hospitality industry.
Yeah.
Followed closely by the staffing issues we have with hospitality. I was talking to Neil earlier about some of the arguments I've had on Twitter. I was arguing with some other idiot the other day. People that don't know anything.
I just blocked them now.
Yeah, no, but people have a political point of view, mostly about Brexit or whatever, but they don't know any of the data that they're talking about, you know, and people were going, oh, we need to rejoin the European Union to fill our hospitality jobs. Well, that would be okay, except that in France is 237,000 unfilled hospitality jobs. In Germany, there's 123,000 unfilled hospitality jobs. In Spain, there's 109... Everybody is suffering the same. Everybody's given up work. Yeah. So the hospitality industry had lockdowns, the staffing shortage, and now they're going to get energy bills. Yeah. There aren't going to be any independent pubs and restaurants open.
No, there won't be.
Yeah.
There will just be amorphous chains, and it's very, very sad.
Mm.
As I said, I was scoffing at a little local place in Westgate yesterday, and it was delicious. You know, I had shell on prawns, and it was just lovely, overlooking the beach. And I'm not a fan of chains, I have to say. So I like to go and speak to a chef and eat their delicious food. Mm. It's always different.
Is that Finbar's?
Finbar's, yes. I love Finbar's. Yeah. How did you recognise it?
I've been a couple of times.
And, of course, having a greyhound, she loves that space on the beach when, you know, the sandy beach, of course.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought you were going to say they had a hare that she chased.
Yeah, there was the Jack Russell. And Jack Russells are so feisty. So this little Jack Russell, well, they were racing around for hours.
Good ratters they are.
Yeah. Dig, dig, dig.
Yeah, absolutely. I was going to say something, and I can't remember what now. About another one of my conspiracies about what's going on in the world.
Well, I think people are now frightened. What were you going to say, Paul Anderson?
Did you see Starbucks announced this morning they no longer accept cash in their coffee shops?
That is also frightening, the whole cash thing.
Yeah, but a lot of people are having a go at them. And there's one or two other chains that are no longer taking cash. And a lot of people are having a go at them. Except there's a little drawback here. Because if you take cash, you know, I own a coffee shop. If you take cash, what do you do with the cash?
Put it under your mattress.
Well, you can't put it in the bank because the bank don't accept cash any longer.
No.
You can't take it into the bank. The bank go, no, sorry, you can't leave it here.
I literally know people stashing cash under their mattress and buying generators. I'm talking normal people.
Can you give us some names and addresses?
No, I can't.
But this is a lot of the problem, you know, that we're being driven down this route and people are having to go at Starbucks and whatever your thoughts on it, you know, Starbucks might deserve a kick in for all kinds of things. But the reality is it's not their fault that they can only take cash because they can only take credit cards. If you take cash, you can't do anything. I mean, I just drove.
How do we spend a penny?
But I just drove 900 miles across France, and I always take some cash with me for the tolls. Not one toll booth accepted cash.
Well, you said there was nobody on them. They were all automated.
None of them were manned. None of them took cash. You had to. It was a contactless card. That's the only thing. I tried to buy petrol. None of them took cash. You have to pay with a credit card or a debit card or a contactless card.
Yeah, it's kind of. Also, you wonder, like little market traders, you know, little street traders who always take cash.
Yeah, but the problem is once you're into that digital economy, they then have total control.
Yeah,
you know, I've had problems with my Apple Pay.
Yeah,
trying to buy things over £100, I keep getting declined. I don't know why. Nobody will tell me why. I can afford the things that I'm trying to buy, but that I keep, you know. So there's someone sitting in an office going, "No, you can't buy that. I'm not letting you pay for that." And there's nothing you can do about it.
Well, it's another show, really. It's not the Business Bunker show. But, you know, we're getting to a stage, I think, where people are beginning to think about this Chinese credit system. And, you know...
Social credit system.
Yeah. Where if we drive too many miles, we're not allowed to...
Turn your electric car off.
Yeah.
Did you see that? See that bloke posted his bill for having his electric car serviced?
Oh, tell me.
It's $29,000. Yeah. He put a car in for a service and he got a bill for $29,000. They said, we had to replace the battery.
It's bonkers. Yeah.
Crazy stuff. Yeah. And of course, with the energy rates now, it's no longer cheaper to run an electric car.
No.
It's actually cheaper to run a petrol car.
Because
of the cost of electricity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know what I think. I worry that they're building over farmland and stuff like that. And I've just seen a tweet here from Arwen Star, and she says, "The lovely small family-run coffee shop where I like to meet my friends barely survived lockdown. It's probably not going to make it through this winter with the looming absurd energy bills. It will have been destroyed accidentally," in speech marks, "on purpose, criminal."
Is that Natalie?
No, it's someone, I don't think you know them. It's Arwen Star.
Yeah, that's Natalie.
Oh, is it?
She's French.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I didn't know you knew her.
I know her very well. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. What's on in Kent has tweeted. And they say, hope everyone had a great bank holiday. Still many things going on in Kent this week. Download our app and find out what Kent has to offer. Have a great show on the Business Bunker. Fantastic app. What's on in Kent? It's a free app. You download it to your phone. Everything that's going on in the county for days out, things for your kids, activities that are going on. Brilliant. Download it. What's on in Kent? It's a fantastic app.
And residents of Maidstone have been telling the council that what they think of Operation Brock and how it affects their lives. So Maidstone Borough Council is carrying out a survey to find out exactly what people think and how the traffic system on the N20 has impacted the residents and businesses in the borough. So you can have your say on that as well. Mm. It's open until the 2nd of October and you can access it. We'll put the link on Kent Business Radio website after. So Operation Brook cannot be a permanent solution, and looking at the responses, there is just not sufficient off-road lorry parking in the vicinity of the ports, and this has to be increased and improved to cope with the high freight and tourist traffic numbers at peak times. Tell you what I've noticed on my journey through, I come through the country lanes from Whitstable, Faversham, Ashford. The amount of big freight on the little country roads that practically squash me into a hedge as I'm coming along. It's like, it's hair-raising now.
Absolutely.
You know, you're doing 40 on a country lane. You can do 50. But then a lorry comes around the corner and you're absolutely like...
I was talking to some friends on Facebook. When I came back from France, I came back on the Saturday and I just breezed through the... I mean, it was a 12-hour drive. But I passed, there was no traffic on the French motorways at all. It was empty. It was really empty. I had a problem at Poitiers where there was some roadworks and somebody had overturned their car in the single lane and we had to wait for a crane to come and lift the car out of the way. But apart from that, we didn't have any delays. We got back to Calais and we got an earlier crossing. And
nice.
Sailed home. Lovely. Mm. The next day, Sunday, a friend of mine, Teresa Scott.
Teresa Green.
Teresa's been on the show four or five times. Anyway, she came back from somewhere on the continent and they had a nightmare journey and they were delayed everywhere. And she was moaning about that and we were just discussing it. The next day was worse by miles. Mm. Train broke down in the tunnel. They were stuck in the tunnel for 5 hours. Oh. They eventually evacuated everyone from their cars and made them walk the rest of the way to England.
Oh, gosh.
Up the service tunnel. Which was horrible, and then they had to get some other train to go and drag the other one out and give them their cars back.
Gosh.
Nightmare.
That does sound awful, because they've had a fire in the tunnel, haven't they?
Quite often they have fires in the tunnel. Yeah. You also get people in the tunnel as well. You get people running up the tunnel. Mm. Well,
we've had quite a lot of migrants on our beach, and I speak Arabic, so I heard these guys speaking Arabic, and then they started teasing our dog and being really stupid with it. And I asked them in Arabic to stop, and they said, we don't speak Arabic, you know, so they denied being Arabs. So they were probably pretending they were from, I don't know where, somewhere, but they were quite rough. I'm sure they've got my husband's Crocs, put it that way.
you've got them. Right. We are Beams Go Football Crazy for a 24-hour kickathon. We are Beams, which is a local charity supporting disabled children, is launching a brand new event, Beams 24 Football Challenge, running from midday Saturday the 3rd of September to midday the 4th of September at Dartford Football Club. 7-a-side teams will play for 1 hour each within the 24-hour period. Teams and individuals of all abilities are encouraged to join up, and everyone is welcome, including youth, disabled, senior or friends and family. So it's at Dartford Football Club. If you want to find out about it, www.wearebeams.org.uk/events-challenges. What you got?
Unemployment rates in the county continued to fall last month, but inflation continues to outstrip wage increases, leaving many worse off.
Yep.
According to the latest figures from the Office for National Statistics, the ONS, the total number of people out of work in July stood at 37,625.
That's in Kent and Medway.
Yeah. and that's the equivalent of 3.3% of the population. And Sevenoaks, which was historically one of the lowest rates of employment, saw a rise of 25, equating to 2% of its population claiming benefits. Why do you think Sevenoaks saw a rise?
Well, within those small numbers, I mean, it happens, isn't it? It's only 25 people.
Yeah.
25 people change their jobs, you know. You can't tell. I mean, the general trend in employment is that there's still 1.2 million unfilled jobs in the country. There's still 900,000 unemployed people. There's still 600,000 people that have removed themselves from the job market and have become economically inactive. And how they're going to pay their electricity bills, I have no idea.
Now, here's something you might want one of Neil's camper vans for. So we've got the Tenterden Folk Festival.
It is, yes, yeah, coming up soon.
Thursday the 29th of September till Sunday the 2nd of October. You can book your tickets and the campsite and find all the details at tentertonfolkfestival.org.uk. There you are, Neil. Contact them, and you could perhaps have a little banner there or something for next year even, and stuff like that.
Yeah,
absolutely.
The sky's the limit.
It's a good old event, that is.
Take a picture of it.
Yeah, that's a good old event, that is.
It is. It's right near you.
It is. It is. Are you a standout small business that has achieved constant growth? Maidstone and Tunbridge Wells Business Awards 2022 are now open for free entry. The categories in both awards are for creative and digital, customer service, innovation, startup, small business, businesswoman of the year, family business, construction business. You can find out all about the two awards by going to businesswardskent.co.uk.
Super. And I don't want to start a long one because...
don't start a long one, whatever you do.
Yeah. Here's a short one. Excited to be hosting a fire walk at Kenwood Trust on Friday the 2nd of September. And you, I'll just give you the website. There's a justgiving.com/fundraising/BNI-pioneer. This is from the lovely Penny Williams.
Yep.
There are still a few places left if you have a burning desire to do something different whilst raising money for a good cause, or perhaps walking on hot coals is something you've always wanted to do.
Absolutely.
We do that every Tuesday, don't
there's
we?
There's a number of, as you know, I'm a trustee of Kenwood Trust. There's a number of things happening at the Trust over the next few months. There's the fire walk in a few days' time. We've got some alpaca walks going on, and there's also a, I don't know what you call it, a religious ceremony that's taking place in a couple of weeks' time that you might want to attend. So if you go to the website kenwoodtrust.org.uk, I think that's the website. You're nodding at me. You're the one that's got it on the
back. But it's not written on here.
Okay. Kenwoodtrust.org.uk. And you can find out all the things that are happening down at the place in Yalding.
I've got an idea. Why don't you put it on kentbusinessradio.co.uk and they can just slash from there.
It is. We've reached the end of the show. Thank you all for listening. A big thank you to our guests, Mr. Neil O'Hara of Getaway Motorhomes, to the lovely folks from the Women in Business Big Show, to my stonkingly gorgeous co-host, Jill Serkin. We'll be back with another show next week. In the meantime, have a fantastic week, everybody, and we'll see you all soon.
Tell you all about my silver birch next week.
Will you? Yeah, lovely.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.